You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Do you know that if you don't ask for help, you don't get it? I learned this lesson powerfully years ago as I took part in an ongoing meditation group. One of our members was chastised by the leader, stating that the member's guides were really frustrated because they wanted to help him, but he would never ask for help. The truth is, there are beings and energies around all of us all the time that want to help, but very often we don't ask. My guest today, Stephanie Banks, learned to really ask for help after she slammed into a rock wall on her bicycle, died, and returned to the living. She's here today to talk with me about her own soulful awakening. Welcome to Full Power Living, where we're dedicated to awakening the world to the power and importance of human emotions. You're listening to us on EmotionalPro.com's radio show page, on blogtalkradio.com/FPL, or through subscription on iTunes. And we have a chat for you in place, as well as a toll-free number for you to call, 888-498-0570. That's 888-498-0570. Stephanie Banks is an award-winning author. She's quickly making her mark as an accomplished author. She was born into a family of intuitives who encouraged fostering faith and accepting guidance from within. And prior to the near-death experience that I mentioned, she led a life directed by modern-day terms that lacked depth and clarity, she says. But immediately following her encounter with death, her life transformed to that of an awakened soul. She's now dedicated her life to mastering ancient wisdom and writing candidly about all that she learns through this process. Her unfailing connection to the non-physical realm offers guidance and transformation to all those that seek profound insight into our existence. She lives with her family in British Columbia, Canada. And Stephanie Banks, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thanks. It's such a pleasure to be here.
So you've written A Soulful Awakening to share with people essentially the message that we can all find answers from within. But can we start with what woke you up, this event in August of 2012, the trauma that allowed you to shift direction or literally slammed you into shifting directions? Will you tell us your story, please?
Sure. Well, just the long and short of it is I was on a mountain biking trip with my husband and our son at a pretty famous ski resort called Whistler. And it's in the heart of the mountains, very unforgiving terrain. And in this, you know, in my particular case, I made an assumption on this one section of this run that we were on. And I thought that I could just roll over a jump that was en route to the bottom of the run. And what I failed to realize is that there was quite a substantial gap between the takeoff and the landing, and I didn't have enough speed to clear it, and I had too much speed to actually slow down and avoid it altogether. So the consequence of that assumption was that I ended up flying through the air and smashing body first, head first into this rock wall on the other side before falling into a gully beneath me with my bike landing on top of me. So basically in those moments, I died. My heart stopped momentarily and I left, and I left my body, and I was guided by one of my guides who I know as Ruby. And Ruby and I traveled, and I saw my life from a much more eternal perspective. I saw all that it encompasses, both here and now in this physical form, as well as my eternal life. And I met some of my other guides, and I was privy to what actually lies beyond the veil, for lack of a better word. And at some point within that experience, I decided that I didn't want to see anymore because I didn't want to persuade myself to stay there. So, you know, just like you hear many people who have near-death experiences, they talk about the beauty and the magnificence that lies on the other side. And I must have felt that, and I decided that I wanted to come back into my body, reinstate with my physical form, and start living my life from a new perspective, one from a more conscious awareness, and also be able to share what I had seen and what I had experienced with other people. Mm-hmm. So at the time, I didn't actually realize that this is what had happened. It came through my recovery and the things that transpired during my recovery process that led me to this awareness of this out-of-body experience. So on my second day of recovery, I found myself really starting to slip into this dark place of feeling very guilty for putting myself in this situation, for not being available to my company. I had 27 employees at the time, and really being unable to come to work and to function as the human being that I was used to doing. I was too injured to be able to do that. So I was confined to my house, and I found myself pacing around and really starting to slip into these negative thoughts. And I made a conscious decision that I needed to do something more proactive with my time. And I grabbed a journal and I went out onto my deck and I sat there and I decided that I would write. And as I was contemplating what I was going to write about, I realized that I had already been writing. So it's like I went into this really deep meditative state without being consciously aware that that's what I was doing, until I noticed that my hand had been writing, it had stopped, and I saw my mother's name written at the bottom. So I went back to the beginning of this passage that I had written, and it turned out to be a 9-page letter from my mother to me, and my mother died in 1996. So you can imagine my surprise and my confusion.
Wow, yeah.
And as I went back and read this letter, she talked about how I now have this open connection to the other side, and that my heart had been blocked, but now it was open. She talked about how we as a collective consciousness here on Earth are going through a very powerful time of change, a spiritual evolution of sorts, and that we're moving in this new direction of higher awareness and consciousness. And she talked about all sorts of concepts that I had never heard of or contemplated before ever. And this was the opening to a newfound passion and a renewal on life for me that was became my driving force to wake up every day and to grab my journal and to write and to ask. You know, you talked about it in the beginning in your intro about asking, and this is what I started to do. I would grab my journal, I would wake up and enthusiastically give thanks for everything that I have in my life, and then I would specifically ask, is there anyone out there who has a message they would like to share with us today? And that's been now a habit that I have of doing almost every day. And the wisdom and the knowledge that has come through from these supportive beings on the other side of the veil is just astounding, and it became very transformative in my own life in terms of how I was living my life. Before the accident, before this open connection, I felt that I was lacking depth and lacking clarity. And you know, now, and you know, after this accident, everything changed for me. And then as I started to share these messages and these words of wisdom and these lessons and these teachings with those around me, I realized that it wasn't just impacting me. It was impacting everybody who encountered these messages that I shared them with. And eventually, I decided, along with my partner, Steve, that we would compile the book in such a way that I could write some of my own personal stories throughout my life that were traumatic at the time, confusing, sad, dealing with all these emotions. And I would write about them. And then at the end of each story, I inserted messages that I had received after my accident from our guides and teachers that were relevant to that particular emotion that I was feeling in that situation. And it enabled me to really look at these circumstances that had happened to me in my life as opportunities for growth, and it gave me a new insight on what I was supposed to learn at the time, and maybe I hadn't, because I was looking at them as negative experiences that were just, you know, thrown in my path to upset my equilibrium. And so the thought behind the book is that people will be able to use my stories as a catalyst to find the change within, in terms of their own life stories and their own belief systems, and to know and really feel that we're supported at every given moment of every day. And through the support, we can really expand and grow as human beings.
Wow, that's really, you've said a lot there. Well, as I mentioned to you prior to starting the show, for the last 43 years as a psychotherapist, for most of that time, I have had the awareness that our Earth is a giant school. You call it an education center. And it makes things so much easier when something comes up and you go, well, what am I trying to teach myself? You know, what can I learn from this? Because my learning is that if you don't learn it, you keep going over and over the same material all the time. And each time it comes up, it's harsher. It's a harsher presentation. It's a harsher lesson. Whereas the second you learn it, you're done and you can move on. Your experience also?
Absolutely. And I, you know, I think that we're habitual creatures, so we create these habits around circumstances, and if we feel a negative emotion, we have a habitual way of dealing with that. So let's just say, for example, somebody does something to us that we really don't like, that we find upsetting, that we find disrespectful. Oftentimes, we just look at that situation in very linear terms, as in that person just did that to me and that's wrong, and, you know, I'm upset about it and I'm going to stand my ground because it's wrong and I don't want that to happen again. What I'm encouraging people to do is to do what I've now been able to do through these teachings, is to look at everything from a much broader perspective and realize that that person who just said something that you found hurtful is on their own path with their own agenda, learning in their own way. And if you look at life as this big opportunity for growth and this big learning center, it's a lot easier, at least in my opinion, it's become a lot easier to not take things so personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gets us into a lot of trouble when we do that, into emotional turmoil, because we start playing the victim, that everybody's out to get me, or they're doing that specifically to hurt me, where often, it's almost always, I would say, maybe 100% of the time, it's not. It's their own expression of whatever they have going on inside and whatever they have to learn. So looking at life as a school enables me, and I'm hoping other people, to realize that we're all here to learn and we're all here to grow. We're all connected, and everything is this constant reflection. And so when you experience something negative coming your way, if you reflect that back in a negative way, this is going to be a cyclical thing that keeps happening to you, negative in, negative out, negative in, negative out. If you are able to get to a point where you can just really focus on sending love, you know, somebody's being hurtful to you, send them as much love as you possibly can, and I challenge you to do that and see what happens, you can change that momentum and start moving it in the opposite direction, and consequently, your life starts moving in a more positive direction.
Absolutely so. So I have one comment that I wanted to make, too. I think it's very striking that your mother gave you birth in physical life and gave you rebirth when you awakened. I think that's really cool.
I never looked at it that way.
I know. It just popped into my head, so I thought I'd share it with you. Isn't that cool? She birthed
you really
twice.
Cool. She did, yeah. And you know what? Honestly, I've never looked at it that way. And now, this is what I mean, like, life, when you start expanding your thought processes, all of a sudden something like that will come up and it gives a whole new light onto the situation, and that's
right.
Such a beautiful way to look at it. And I think, you know, when we talk about death and losing people, it's a very difficult thing to go through. And the thing that I've, I think, learned the most through this whole entire process, and not just learned, but I know it now, like deep down with my entire core, that when we lose people, yes, they're gone in their physical form and we can't reach out and touch them like we could before. We can't call them on the telephone and talk to them like we could before. But they're there and we can communicate with them. And sometimes all it takes is going to somebody who can help you make that connection once, you know, somebody who has the ability to tap into that. And and to be that catalyst for change. And then I've experienced in my own life by doing this for other people, by requesting messages from lost loved ones, all it has taken for those people that are left here behind is that one message, and then they found their own connection with their lost loved one, and all of a sudden they have this new relationship with them, and it's a beautiful one. It's not the same, but we have to start wrapping our brain around this idea of multi-dimensionality, where there is this whole unseen world around us, and when we start experiencing it, you really can begin to feel the amount of love and support that is still available to us.
You know, you remind me, I have a 9-year-old granddaughter who started school yesterday, and she and her younger sister stayed with me the weekend prior and told me that they were scared because they moved during the summertime and were going to go to a new school, and they were scared about making friends and all of this. And so I talked with them about you could either live in fear or you could live in faith, you know. And I helped them to decide to set an intention. So the older one had an intention to make 3 friends on the first day of school. And she had a plan for what she was going to do to make those friends. And she called me yesterday afternoon and talk about this unseen support. She called me yesterday and I said, so how many friends did you make? And she said, I made 5. And Grammy, it just happened. And I said, well, that's the way it is. When you ask for help and you have an intention, it's like magic. And that's what you're talking about. There's a lot of magic we miss when we're not tuned in this way, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, for me personally, that's been the most beautiful change that's transpired within my life. And listening and to other people that have read the book or received messages and have written in and, you know, hearing their own stories of how something within the book just triggered them in some way that they couldn't even explain, but that triggering moved them into the direction of more alignment with their higher self. And when you become more aligned with your higher self and source, that's where those magic of synchronicities really begin to appear, and your life just starts to flow in this really amazing and, like you say, magical way. Life becomes so much easier, and I think oftentimes those synchronicities are always there, but if we're not in complete alignment with ourselves, we miss them. We don't see them because we're blocking them. We're not seeing what's right in front of us. And with children, so your 9-year-old granddaughter, she set her intentions, but she's still open enough to not be so insistent on the outcome. And I think as adults, we set our intention and that's our intention, and, you know, under no circumstances are we not going to succeed in this goal that we've set, or whatever the case may be. And what I'm encouraging people to do is, yes, set your intention. I am a believer in that, by all means. I set intentions all the time. But then I let go of the desired outcome and allow the universe to then take that intention and do what the universe can do with it, which oftentimes will bring about a bigger and more significant change beyond anything that I could have ever imagined.
Yes, that's really it. That's so great. I want to go back and pick up one thing because Ruby talks about it. And let me first mention, you have a whole chapter on synchronicities in your book. And I think there are a lot of things there that people would really get from reading that. The other thing, Ruby talks about humans using trauma to essentially wake themselves up and to help with the development of the soul. And I liked his definition. He says, trauma occurs when we are injured emotionally and physically simultaneously. And so I found that really interesting because we tend to shy away from trauma and think it's a bad things happening to us. But what he's saying there is that we set trauma up so that we can wake ourselves up. Do you have anything to say on that more?
Well, I found that quite an interesting conversation as well when that came out through a writing. And I had had a couple of people ask me about trauma and if I felt that trauma was sort of the connecting link to this spiritual awakening of my own. And I started reading other people's experiences and listening to other speakers. And what I found was that there was definitely this common denominator that oftentimes when people experience a traumatic event, they either go one of two directions. They just keep going spiraling downhill and get themselves into a really dark place, or the opposite happens and it actually catapults them into a higher consciousness of being. And so I decided to ask Ruby, like, what is it that that we get from trauma, and why is it there? And this concept of trauma being designed by us as a collective consciousness of life on Earth, being this tool that we use when need be to kick us into high gear. So essentially, when we're going through something traumatic, there's a pressure buildup, and the quickest way to release that pressure buildup from, in my understanding of it, a physical manner, is for the universe to kick into high gear, and we have this instant connection, which we always have, but it's more of a more intense connection to our source, and source absorbs that traumatic pressure and releases it back to the universe so that essentially, in layman's terms, we don't explode within. And through this connection, this very intense, close, first-handed connection, we open up the door to this pathway, and we're flooded oftentimes with all of the energetic forces that go along with the non-physical realm and our connection to our higher self and source. And oftentimes you hear about those who have had near-death experiences and they see the other side, they have miraculous healings, they come back a completely different person, as was the case with me. And trauma is a tool that we have designed together at some point in our creation that we use to release that pressure, and consequently we end up with this amazing reconnection to who we really are.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Thank you for that explanation. We're up to our first break, and I'm talking today with Stephanie Banks, who's author of A Soulful Awakening. And I'm going to ask her when we come back, ask you, Stephanie, when we come back, what exactly is an awakened soul? And I also want to explore the cost of manipulative living. You're listening to Full Power Living, and we'll be right back.
As a parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting raiseincrediblekids.com now. That's raiseincrediblekids.com.
Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. First of all, please sign up for our mailing list at emotionalpro.com. We'd love to send you our bi-weekly newsletter telling you about our programs. Next week, I'm going to be talking about the practice. And we're going to talk about a simple practice that you can do that will allow you to put your life on a better track, a simple thing that you can do. And I'm talking with Barb Schmidt next week. And that's 9 a.m. Pacific time on Thursday, September 3rd. I also want to thank you for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. And while you're on that Emotional Pro homepage, click through to find out more about the CCFL Global Academy. That's a membership site that I'm a part of, which is helping parents to nurture their children for life in our changing world. And I'm an expert there on emotional mastery and codependence. You can also, on Emotional Pro, get a list of the signals of 7 everyday emotions that can help you work more effectively with those emotions as they come up in your life. Today I'm talking with award-winning author Stephanie Banks, who was born into a family of intuitives and then had her own traumatic experience, which has transformed her life. And Stephanie, before our break, I raised the question of your book is called A Soulful Awakening, and I'd like you to explain to us exactly what is an awakened soul.
Well, I think when you become an awakened soul, you really start to pay attention to life around you in a much different way. So, for example, you start to realize that almost every decision that you make on a daily basis is either coming from the place of fear or the place of love. And when you come from a place of fear, you tend to judge, you tend to manipulate, you tend to try to control every situation, you're quick to anger, you're irritable, agitated, all these negative emotions that fall under the umbrella of fear. When you come from a place of love, you're really starting to understand and know on a deep level that we are all one, we're all connected. So when you're interacting with people, you begin to lose your ego to a certain degree. I think we always have our ego. It's always a part of us, but we don't let it take the driver's seat as often. We put it in the back seat and we control our life in an uncontrollable way, if that makes any sense at all. So we come from this place of love, which encompasses compassion, empathy, selflessness, complete unconditional love for everybody around us, no matter what walk of life they're coming from. And so as you start to develop and nurture this new way of being, you begin to interact with the world around you in a completely different fashion. And that doesn't mean that you don't fall back every now and then and become angry at your kids for being disrespectful or whatever, your employees or your employer. These things happen, but what you do in those situations is different than what you would have done before awakening. And what you would have done before is to get angry, hold resentment, let it build up, never really deal with it perhaps, shove it underneath the carpet, pretend it didn't happen, and then down the road it erupts again, and those, it may be in a different situation, but those same emotions resurface. As an awakened soul, you're now able to look at circumstances that happen in your life as an opportunity for growth. What is it in the situation that I'm here to learn? I lost my cool. I yelled when I shouldn't have. I'm okay with that now. I'm going to make an intent that from now on, I'm going to try my best not to buy into that fear and that anger. And what was it about that circumstance that was a learning opportunity for me? So really the big difference between an awakened soul and somebody who's still half asleep, as I like to say, is that we're coming from a place of love as opposed to a place of fear, and the world becomes a very expanded place of knowingness that we're all connected and we're all one.
Thank you. Wow, that's nice. I want to follow up on that, because this week I spoke with a woman, and it reminded me, I'm now in my 70s, and I've seen this kind of thing go around several times, this kind of mindset that was coming to me, that we're going through all these changes. And she was concerned about worldwide economic slowdown of our food supply, safety for herself and her family. And I found myself saying 4 things to her. One is that we're all going through major transformation. 2 is that whatever's going to happen is what's going to happen. is something I learned years ago, and that is when we operate on the motive of fear, we're guaranteed to create the thing we're afraid of. And four, our most important job at this time is to get in charge of fear. And you're saying, I think Ustro says, fear fears love. So you're saying use love rather than fear. And I like your comments on the kinds of things that are coming up for people that I've been running into anyway.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said that when you're fearful of something, that's what you're going to experience. And it's one thing to have an awareness of what's going on in the world and to have some knowledge of worldwide events. It's another thing to dwell on them and to focus so intently on the negative that's going on in the world. And I have this vision in my mind that I like to share with people, and it's two hamster wheels. They're going in opposite directions. One hamster wheel is going in the direction of fear, negativity. The other one is going in the direction of love, positivity. And, you know, it's okay to hop on the negative wheel for short periods of time, see what's going on, inform yourself to a certain degree. But then it's really important to get back onto the wheel of love and start pushing your momentum and your thoughts and your energy in the direction of love. And the best way to, in my opinion, to deal with circumstances that are really out of our control in terms of war in different parts of the world, hunger, famine, the bee population diminishing, all these things that we could really worry about and brood about all day long, is to send as much love as we possibly can to those parts of the world, to those beings, to our crops, to the bees, whatever it is that you choose to focus your intention on. And anything other than that is really just adding to the momentum of the negativity that's going on. And then, you know, there's the bigger picture of why is there a lot of negativity going on in the world? Why is this? Why does it seem like the state of the world economics is in collapse? And why do we seem like we're on the verge of diminishing crops and famine for everybody? And really, I have a very strong and firm belief that what happened in 2012, there was a big population, part of the population that was concerned that this was doomsday. This was the end of the world, 2012. Really, what it was, in my opinion, is it was a marker that we went through around that time, not necessarily on that day, but around that general time period, where we shifted as a collective consciousness, as a whole on this planet, from being slightly more negative to slightly more positive, which is a fantastic thing to focus on. We've made it. We've pushed through that really dark negative energy, and now we're moving in the proper direction. The scales have tipped. So as this happens and as we begin to evolve and continue this spiritual evolution that we're going through, the negative is going to fight back. The fear is going to fight back, right? Fear has energy as well, and it's going to rise to the surface because there's lots of people on the planet that aren't at this place. So it's really important for those of us who are to focus as much positive intention as we can in the right direction.
I think that's really lovely. Well, tied in with that, you and your guides talk some about manipulation, and manipulation, codependence, what I also have learned to call as energy sapping, has fascinated me for years. And it comes, according to Ustro, comes under the umbrella of fear. And he defines it as the use of words in an inappropriate manner with a self-serving objective in mind, and also coercing another to partake in an activity that may appear beneficial to both parties but is not. And I have found that manipulation is highly debilitating. It's the basis for abusive relationships, for example. And I wanted to know if you have anything you'd like to expand on in terms of both the kinds of damage that manipulative living can do and what we can do to move out of it.
Well, I think that's, and that's such an amazing message from Ustro, and that one is in the book, and I chose to share that because we all have experienced manipulation at some point in our life, if not multiple times in our life. And I think for the majority of us, we've also attempted to use manipulation to get what we seemingly want. I know that I have at some points in my life. I don't anymore. I'm very conscientious of manipulation. And manipulation does fall under the umbrella of fear. It's an ego-based tool that comes out when we are so fixated on a self-serving idea, and we'll do anything we can to portray that and to get what we need out of a situation, or maybe not even necessarily what we need, but what we think we want. And I'll just use an example of a school that I went to in high school, the private school, and I have a chapter in the book on the school. And yes, fear-based tools were very much a part of the quote-unquote curriculum to get kids to do what the headmasters and the deans wanted us to do. And manipulation was something that came out all the time. And what happens, in my experience, from what I've seen, when people try to manipulate another being, that person that's being manipulated becomes very resentful. They become very closed in. They shut down to not necessarily just the person who's manipulating them, but also those around them, because there's a loss of trust. Mm-hmm. And whether we know it or not, on a conscious level, we can feel that there's something wrong with that way of being, a manipulation in itself. It just feels wrong. It makes you feel dirty. It makes you feel used and abused. And I think that part of this shift, well, I know that part of this shift, from a spiritual sense, encompasses a change in paradigm. So these fear-based tactics of control and manipulation are falling to the wayside. That doesn't mean that they don't exist still, because they do. They're very much part of our physical reality, but they are beginning to shift, and they're beginning to change and fall to the wayside. And more people are standing up for themselves and saying, you know, that's not right. I don't deserve to be manipulated, and I can see right through you. And it's really important to set those boundaries with people that come into your life that are very used to using manipulation. And again, it comes back to this habitual characteristics that we are as human beings. I have an employee right now that is so manipulative. He's an amazing worker, but he's manipulative, and I need to sit down and have a chat with him and point this out to him, because maybe somebody has never pointed it out to him.
Right.
And oftentimes, that's all it is bringing awareness through love, not through anger, because oftentimes when we're being manipulated, we just want to explode and tell the person to get lost and never show up again. Right?
Yes, that's true.
And really what I'm advocating for is to take the time and find the love within you to talk to that person if it's possible, and bring it to their attention, bring it into the light. And if things don't change, then maybe it's just time to walk away.
I think that's a really loving thing to do, and I appreciated the words that you have in your book about bringing love and compassion to it. My learning, as I've been working with this for more than 40 years now, when I realized I could find out something about it. And my learning is that what I call the first rule of energy sapping is that it takes one to know one. That if we have people who come into our lives who are manipulative, there's some way in which we're manipulating ourselves. And like you're saying, if you sit down and have a straight out talk with somebody, you're no longer manipulating, or you're not manipulating. And I don't mean to insinuate that you're manipulating here, but there could be something there for you to learn, as there could be for any of us. But in general, if I encounter people who are manipulative in my life, it means that there are places in me that I still manipulate. And when I heal those with compassion and love, then I don't attract that anymore. There's no place for anybody to hook into me like that. Do you have any comment on that?
Oh, I completely agree. And that's why I think it's really important to not take life so seriously and so personally. And by this particular employee showing this to me, that is a signal to me that I've got something to learn out of this. And you know, when, how does that saying go? When the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Uh-huh.
And oftentimes it's really hard to let your ego go and think, okay, this person who's now manipulating and lying and controlling to me has something to teach me.
Right.
We really don't like to acknowledge that. And when we do, that's when you really provide yourself the potential and the opportunity to grow as a person. And when you embrace that and look at these situations as having that potential, that's when your life really starts to unfold in this magical way that we talked about earlier, where synchronicities mm-hmm. start to unfold and everything just sort of is like the domino effect. So when something comes into your life that you deem negative, there's a reason for that. And life is this reflection. And that's another hard one for people to swallow because, you know, I have another girl right now who I'm trying to counsel through a series of, she just had a tough life and she's in a tough spot. And she's constantly coming back to, I've been a really good person. I've lived this really good, you know, I've been a really good person. Everything I do, I do out of love. And I really do see that she does. But somewhere, at some point, she's been a part of this creation. Mm-hmm. And she keeps falling back into this victim role. And at some point, you have to dig deep within and find the empowerment within you to take recognition for your life and why it is where you're at right now and to move forward from this place of love, no matter how hard it is when you're dealing with people that are controlling and manipulative. That's a difficult thing to do, especially when there's a lot of resentment that you've held on for years.
Right.
And I think it's really important just to note here quickly that when you're dealing with somebody who you've had some history with, so let's just take an ex-husband, an ex-wife, and there's a lot of history there. It's really hard sometimes to find that within you to forgive them for the things that you feel that they've done to you. And when you aren't at that place, don't force yourself. You can't force it. You have to wait until you're ready to actually forgive that person wholeheartedly. Otherwise, you're just telling yourself that you're forgiving them and you think that you have, but those lessons are still going to appear in different ways, in different forms. So if you can't do it yet, that's okay. And don't be hard on yourself when you can't. The time will come when you're able to do that.
That's really great. You know, as I've been looking at manipulation, I see that everybody is born manipulative because we can't survive on our own when we're infants. So we have to have somebody else to go through. And so it appears to me, and I'm growing stronger in this, that culturally we've accepted that manipulation is normal. And I now say, well, it's common, but it's not normal because we're really supposed to be growing out of it the same way we grow out of bedwetting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the basis behind all of that is the recognition that we're all one and we're all connected.
Yes.
When you think, if you were to take the idea of trying to manipulate yourself into doing something, it doesn't make any sense. So why would it make sense for me to try to manipulate you? You are a reflection of me and I'm a reflection of you. We're both connected. We're here to live on this journey together, cohesively. Yes, we're on our own individual path and we have our own life experiences that we need to go through, but we're doing it together. We're here to support and share and nurture one another. And the thing that we've become really removed from, but I think we're heading back in that direction, but currently we're removed from this idea. And especially in North America, we have this tendency to think that we need to be independent. We need to do everything on our own. And it's not okay to help other people for help. When we're okay with being able to ask other people for help and to give other people the support that they may need, then we're less likely to try to manipulate a situation because we won't need to. People will just be there to help us, get to the point of where we want to be. And then on the flip side of that coin, we're there to help other people get there. So you just become more cohesive. There isn't this combative, competitive feeling of I need to get further, faster, and I'll do anything I need to get there. No, we're all going in the same direction. Let's just all help each other get there.
So, you know, as part of this conversation, you said, well, it's important we have to dig deep inside of ourselves. And it was striking me as you were talking that you're also giving the very strong message that we may have to dig deep within ourselves, but once we start doing that, we have an enormous amount of support and help available. All we have to do is ask for it. Okay, I'm digging, so help me. And we'll get it, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you don't have to bash into a rock wall or, you know, have another traumatic life experience to get there. It comes from a place of knowing, really, as I think I wrote a blog on this on my website, of knowing deep down that you are supported. If you're sitting on the fence and you're still not quite there yet, you may not be open enough to receive it. But if you know that you're supported at all times by other beings, by your higher self, by source, by each other, then it's much easier to find that connecting link, as Carlos Castaneda would say. And when you do find it and you start to experience it and feel it, that's when you make this big shift. And that's what a soulful awakening has been doing for people, which I am so grateful for, because I really didn't know how it was going to impact people. When I have messages from people saying, something in it just shifted me, and now I know, I get it. A lady wrote to me over one blog. It was one paragraph. She's been looking for help for years. I don't know what it was. I don't know what in that struck the chord that needed to be struck, but it did. And sometimes that's all it takes. It takes a lyric. It takes a touch. It takes one simple sentence by somebody walking down the street. And that's why it's so important to reach out with love, because you never know how you're going to impact somebody.
Right. Oh, that's really so important. So let me mention, you say you have your blog is on your website, and that's stephaniebanks.org. Is that correct?
Yes.
So stephaniebanks.org. And also, Stephanie, while we're talking business here, how can people get their own copy of your book? They can get it on your website, through Amazon. What? How's it available?
They can get it from the website, stephaniebanks.org. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Balboa Press, various bookstores. It's available mostly online. I think most people go online. So it's there, and it's available, and it's a gift to everybody out there. I'd really like everyone to treat it as that. It might be the best $20 that you've ever spent.
Well, there's a lot in it. So you essentially get messages from many different people, and one of them is Diane. And I actually sent her quote to someone yesterday, and it made a huge difference to them, by the way. Put that in your blog.
Oh, wow.
And her quote was, complete faith in the unknown, lack of concern for tomorrow, and undivided attention on today will bring you to a place of pure joy. Are there any tricks to having complete faith in the unknown, no concern for tomorrow, and undivided attention on today? How do you do that?
I think it takes a lot of effort and a lot of diligence at first, because we tend to want to control every move, every situation, every occurrence in life. And, I would add on another line, which would be my own, to that quote. And I shared this with an employee yesterday who's struggling with this. And that sentence would be, the only plan I make is the plan to change my plans. Because life will always throw you surprises. And if you just have faith that as long as you're living in accordance with your higher self, meaning coming from a place of love, acting through compassion, doing selfless acts, taking time for self, which is a selfless act, and following your passions, you're in alignment with yourself. And when you're in that alignment, you can have complete faith in the unknown, because the universe is supporting you. It's working in your favor. So focusing on the past, focusing on the future too much prevents you from living in the present moment. And when you're present in the moment, you're mindful of every word you speak, every thought you think, every action you take, and that's all that we can really control, is what we do in every moment. And how we choose to live every moment is a reflection of where our future is going to take us. So that was a beautiful quote. And that was, Diane was a mother who passed away of a very close friend of mine. It was the first message that I received for another person. And that was a transformational message for her. And what a beautiful quote. And I'm so glad that you brought that up, because it's something that I used to repeat to myself driving to work every day. I found that when I first awakened, when I was coming out of the slumber, it took quite a few years, and I'm still not fully awake. It's a learning process. But when I was coming into this new way of life, I became very aware of the thoughts that I was having and how repetitive they were and how debilitating they were. And I have a long drive to work, so every day I would catch myself. And what I did is I decided, you know what, if I'm going to have all these thoughts, I'm going to replace them with positive ones. And that was one of the quotes that I used to say to myself when I would catch myself thinking and worrying and making lists. And I did, at the back of the book, make a list of all these mantras and quotes that I used to repeat to myself. And I found them very useful.
Yes, they're wonderful. All right, you dropped something in that explanation. You said time for yourself is a selfless act. Will you explain that, please?
Well, I think we tend to have this belief system that when we're doing things that make us feel happy and bring us joy, that aren't inclusive of our family and our friends and our employees and our employers and coworkers or whatever, all these people that are around us all the time, that that's being selfish. Especially as parents, I think we have this tendency to think that every move we make, everything we do, needs to be something that encompasses our family. And although that time is very important, what's equally as important, if not more important, to be blunt, is to find the time for yourself, whether it's on a daily basis, whether it's on, you know, a couple times a day, whether it's every other day. At some point within your day, it's really important to take time for yourself and do something that brings you peace, no matter what that is. Maybe it's going for a bike ride. Maybe it's doing a meditation in the morning. Maybe it's writing. Maybe it's painting. Maybe it's cooking. It doesn't matter. But to find a place for yourself, uninterrupted, cell phone off, computer off, and do something that you're passionate about. Do something that brings you inner tranquility. And it brings you back to yourself. It reconnects you with your higher being. And when you do that, especially when you do it on a regular basis, which I highly encourage, I do it every morning for 10 minutes. That's all I have. I work 16 hours a day. And I think a lot of us can relate to that. So it's easy to say, I don't have time. But what happens is when you take that time, especially first thing in the morning, in my experience, is you get that time back tenfold throughout the day, because your life starts out, your day starts out in this fashion where everything's in alignment. So if you can keep that momentum going throughout the day, you'll notice that your life just flows so much better. You don't have all these problems and issues flying in your direction. And when they do, you're able to manage them better. So taking that 10 minutes, exponentially over the course of your day, you get it back. So it's not a selfish act. It's something that is very crucial in being able to maintain healthy and positive relationships with other people.
I'm struck as you're saying that. Thank you for that. I'm struck that we seem often more willing to allow other people to take their time to support us than we are to allow our own selves to support ourselves.
Well, and I think that goes back to just belief systems that somewhere along the way we've adopted that have told us that in order to be a selfless individual, you need to always be serving other people. And that there's some truth to that, in the sense that, yes, we're here to serve others. And when you serve others, you feel a sense of happiness and peace just in that act of kindness, and your brain actually releases serotonin, and it's a magical thing to do. But within that concept, from the time we're little kids, it becomes almost a negative thing to want to do things for ourselves, to be okay with compliments, to be confident in ourselves, to know that we're good at something. You know, I caught myself doing this when my son was young. He's 13. I've learned a lot in the last 3 years in particular. But I used to, when he was expressing himself that he was really good at something, I found myself trying to stifle that a little bit, because I didn't want him to grow up being arrogant. Well, there's a big difference between being arrogant and being confident. And it's really important to teach our kids to hold on to that empowerment. Yeah, you are. You're amazing at that. You're amazing at everything you do. Everything you do, you have the potential to be amazing at. You just need to keep believing that. And we seem to have this belief system that it's a bad thing to acknowledge that within ourselves and with taking time for ourselves. And it's not. It's the opposite.
Wow. So I just want to draw things to a close with something that Hazel says. And you've already mentioned this earlier in the show about the fact that we've turned the page and are now having more positive, more focus on positive than negative. But she says the road to recovery is being paved, and it is time to choose a new course. And she says if our intentions are based on love, everything else will fall into place. Before we stop, do you have anything you want to add to that?
I would just say that I'm going to post that one on my website, and that's one to think about and to reiterate on a daily basis, because it's so true, and it's the basis of everything that people like yourself and like myself and, you know, millions of other people around the world are trying to share with others. And when you come from that place of love, you're adding to the shift and to the change of consciousness and the direction that we're going. And it's comes down to a very simple concept. In every situation, you have a choice. Am I going to react out of fear, or am I going to respond out of love?
Beautiful, beautiful. Well, I know that pain and loss and trauma and suffering all conspire to push us to wake up. I'm going to say that I'm really sad that you hurt yourself on that rock wall in August of 2012. But I also want to thank you for using that experience, Stephanie, to wake up, and especially for taking your personal wake-up call to issue a wake-up invitation to others through writing your book, A Soulful Awakening. Let me remind people that your website is stephaniebanks.org. And Stephanie, thank you very much for being with us on Full Power Living today.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
All right. Join us live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern Time, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. Remember, next week, September 3rd, Barb Schmidt, who is founder of Peaceful Mind, Peaceful Life, shares simple tools for managing stress, finding inner peace, and uncovering happiness in only minutes of your day. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media has been our producer today. Thank you so much, Paul, for now. I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
To Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.